Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Mary Lee Williams. It's been about 5 months since Governor Tom Wolf issued the first shutdown order statewide. Nationwide, there's criticism of mixed messages and a lack of clear communication. Thus far, more than 160,000 people have died from COVID-19, and a vaccine is unlikely till the end of the year, at the earliest. Baruch Fischoff is a professor at Carnegie Mellon University who studies public perception of risk and human decision-making. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
From your perspective, how much of an impact could improved communication make on slowing the country's current pandemic?
I think our national communications have been disastrous. I think they've made life much more difficult than it needs to be for people. And if we had clear, coordinated communications at the national level, it would make it life much easier for everybody. And those communications need there's sort of two prongs to that communication. One prong is just telling us the facts so we understand what we're looking at. And the second one is giving us the best advice from public health officials in terms of what's good for my health, the health of my family, and what's good for the population as a whole.
Do you think people can understand really complex scientific information? Do you think it's possible for them to take in this information clearly and make good decisions based on it?
The research shows that if you do a good job of communicating with people, that they can understand what they need to know. First of all, figuring out, you know, of all the fire hose of information that the technical community could douse people with, what do they really need to know? And then what do they know already? And then how do you explain what's typically just a few missing facts in terms that they can understand? And the critical thing there is to talk to people, is to let them tell you what they know, what their concerns are, who are the sources that they trust. And then you can go back to our research literature. You can say, oh, people have difficulty understanding how quickly these diseases spread, you know, this exponential growth of the disease. Or people have difficulty understanding how they can be responsible for somebody else's illness who they never know, because you transmit it to somebody else who transmit it to somebody else who's immunocompromised and then gets sick. And then there's research on how you make those potentially hard to understand things clear to people. So I would say in the United States, I would say the Allegheny County Health Department does a vastly better job than the Centers for Disease Control and Communication. You know, they send out at 11 every day, they send out a notice that gives us the facts about what's going on in our community. They're very competent people. They sort of know us and how we live. I think they're sheltered from the national politics that complicate CDC's job. So communication isn't a mystery, but it's just not done responsibly.
Do you think that Allegheny County's communications are enough, or do we need more?
Allegheny County could do things perfectly, and still we would be in trouble because we don't just listen to WESA and read the Post Gazette or follow Trib online. All of us are exposed to national media. Many people follow social media. So you can get a clear message from one trusted source, and unless you can block out everything else, then you end up being confused. So the federal government needs to do its job in order for Allegheny County to do its job, you know, in order for our own physicians to do their job. I mean, all this noise in the background, you know, this irresponsible noise in the background complicates the job for people who are trying to communicate responsibly.
How can people do their own risk assessments if they don't feel like they can turn to a trusted source in public officials?
I try to think like an epidemiologist. So what would an epidemiologist say? Well, I'm planning something. You know, I'm planning a trip to the store, to the museum. I say, well, how much disease is there? What's the prevalence? I learned something about that from Allegheny County's daily report. And then I say, what's the risk of exposure to whatever disease is there? And I say, well, there's some things I can do to protect myself. And then I can see, well, what are the other practices there? Will other people be wearing face masks? is there good ventilation? You know, is this establishment cleaning things up? And then you say, well, if there's some disease there and I did not succeed in protecting myself, how bad is it going to be? And there, you could just read or listen to find out what it is. It seems like a lot of people don't get very sick. Some people get sick and it takes them an indeterminate amount of time to get better. So if we had numbers for each of those, somebody could run the numbers for you and tell you what your risk is. Because people don't give us those numbers, I'm kind of left guessing. I'm doing ballpark estimates on, you know, what are life and death matters.
Baruch Fischoff is a professor at Carnegie Mellon University who studies public perception of risk and human decision making.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. A new academic year is set to begin, and many schools have decided on remote learning or just a few days a week of in-classroom teaching. That leaves parents who cannot work from home in a quandary. Where can their children go to keep up with their studies? Kara Simonolo is the executive director of Trying Together, an early childhood learning advocacy group. Kara, welcome to The Confluence.
Hi, Kevin. Nice to talk with you.
And Tony Beasley is the director of the Homewood Early Learning Hub and Family Center. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Are families turning to you? Kara, let's start with you.
They are. We have provided a bunch of resources for families, recognizing or hearing from them that they are in a bit of a quandary. We have a lot of families who still have to work and they need to figure out what to do with their school age children. And so they've sort of reached out to us and our website to get access to a suite of resources that can help them figure out how they might go about sort of juggling work and family life and schooling.
Tony, are parents a bit frantic, not knowing where to turn? What are you hearing from the families with school-age children that you normally serve with the Homewood Early Learning Hub and Family Center?
Well, so for the past 6 months, you know, we have been under troubling times. And a lot of their concerns that they speak about, Kevin, is not having the privilege of working from home. And if they do find services that are available to accept their children while they're work, we're looking at transportation issues or not being able to afford that child care, and mostly simply just not having that internal family support.
Child care facilities normally serve preschoolers during the school year. They were shut down earlier in the pandemic. Not all have reopened. Has the demand for care increased as a result? And Tony, can you share maybe a story of a family in the Homewood area that is struggling with child care at this time, if that has worsened by the uncertainty of kids being allowed in classrooms?
A story that I can tell you is one of our families who has both. She has early learning children and she has school-age children. For her early learning child, who is 2 years old, she didn't have a problem with her child only because there are child care facilities that are still in operation. For her school-age children, she did meet a stumbling block, didn't know where to turn. She is one that does not have that internal support, you know, meaning grandma, uncle, sister, brother. And so she looked to the family support for just some solutions and how she can help. It's difficult when you don't have those internal supports. And recognizing those concerns, the parents that are involved with the Homewood Early Learning Hub and Family Center have come together with hopes to offer that support to each other. So we have families, as I said, that don't have that luxury of working from home. And we have families that do have that luxury. And the ones that do have extended their support to the families that need support. So what they're doing, they're hoping to form, for lack of better words, a babysitting circle of comfort to develop a structure where they can provide, you know, that academic support or activities and the child care needed.
Kara, even if there is room for childcare facilities to accept young schoolers. What services could be provided, could be offered in terms of learning assistance? After all, the youngsters are supposed to be doing classwork, learning at that time.
Most childcare facilities here in Allegheny County have always provided before and after school care for school-aged children. So as a matter of practice, they have a lot of experience with supporting school-aged children. And so what they're doing now is they're extending their services so that they're providing the care and support around learning through the school day. So recently, the state has sort of waived some regulations that allows childcare providers to support school-agers during the school day. They are bringing on additional teaching staff and tutors. They're getting equipment. They're changing out furniture so that it's the sort of the size for school-age children versus preschool children. And they are sort of stepping up to provide support to our elementary school children.
But does this place an extra burden on providers, an extra financial burden?
It does. It is most definitely challenging. We're lucky that the state did get approval for subsidy to pay for school day hours. In the past, the federal ruling was such that subsidy would only pay for after and before school time. That's, you know, federally, they've sort of given guidance that they can extend that during the school day. So families that utilize subsidy have that ability, which is great. That'll provide support to that particular set of families. But as we know, there are a lot of families who either are still on the wait list, the subsidy wait list, or aren't quite eligible for subsidy and did not have into their family household budget a plan for covering costs related to childcare during the school day. And so you have a lot of families that are still struggling. And so we need policymakers sort of stepping up and recognizing that gap and trying to figure out how do we make sure the childcare sector sort of survives the pandemic and families thrive during the pandemic.
Finally, has this moment spotlighted the role that childcare has in our economy?
There is no economic recovery without the sustainability of childcare.
Kara Simonolo is the executive director of Trying Together, an early childhood learning advocacy group. And Tony Beasley is the director of the Homewood Early Learning Hub and Family Center. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin, for having us.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. More than 2 months ago, a black man named Christian Cooper was racially harassed while he was birding in Central Park. Many environmental organizations responded with statements promising to work on better supporting black nature enthusiasts. State Impact Pennsylvania's Donna McDermott reports on what that support could look like.
There was a lady down the street where she just happened to be walking to one of the neighbors up the street, and she saw it one day, and she actually took the path through because she wanted to see everything that was there, and she was just so amazed that she came down to ask questions and learn about the garden.
Latisse Brown, who's wearing a mask, is sitting in the shade of a large tree, looking out over a small clump of blue, yellow, and purple flowers growing just next to a sidewalk in York. She's partnered with Pennsylvania Audubon to plant this garden that benefits birds, pollinators, and, ideally, the people who live nearby.
That's exactly what we want. We want the people to come out and learn about these things that they can take to their own homes.
Greg Goldman, the executive director of Audubon, Pennsylvania, published a statement in June naming outreach efforts, like the garden that Brown is sitting by, as evidence of their commitment to ensuring a safe, natural environment for everyone. The statement came at the height of Black Lives Matter protests that drew attention to institutional racism well beyond police departments.
But producing a statement and posting it on a website, that's a good first baby step.
That's Dr. Robert Bullard, a sociologist and co-chair of the National Black Environmental Justice Network.
What's real is the extent to which racial justice within their organization is going to make a difference as to what they do and how they spend their money and the kinds of people that they will bring into their midst to do justice.
Bullard says that traditionally white nature organizations need to acknowledge that the environment should mean more than just untouched wilderness.
DJ, the environment is where we live, work, play, worship, learn, as well as the physical and natural world.
He has been a key figure in the environmental justice movement since it began in the 90s. He says he and other Black environmental advocates have asked nature organizations to work with them since the beginning.
We don't work on social issues. That's what they told us. We don't work on social issues. And our response was, breathing is not social.
Bullard is describing environmental issues that have existed for decades. Damian Ruffner, an Audubon employee, says that they have a lot of work to do. Work that they've started. Ruffner manages the Discovery Center in Philadelphia, and their top priority is supporting the people that live in the neighborhood.
Instead of us coming into the community and saying, you need a bird walk, we can go into the community and say, we have an open space here. What do you need? They might say, oh, we would like to know a little bit more about environmental jobs. Well, we can set up an environmental job program.
Many Black scientists are sharing their work in the environment independently of large nature organizations. Dr. Tanisha Williams is a postdoctoral researcher at Bucknell University. She helped to run a July Twitter campaign, hashtag Black Botanists Week.
As far as climate change, I know that a lot of communities that are going to be impacted are communities that are of color, of lower income. And having this highlight on doing research on plants and being active in your community can connect climate change and also botany.
William says that getting people excited about nature can help inspire and connect those who want to, as she says, save the only planet we have.
We do have our national parks and different conservation areas, which are great, and we need to make sure we hold on to those parcels of land. But I'm hoping that more of the public will want to get back into nature, want to appreciate nature more.
Latisse Brown gets that. As she and I sit in the shade, listening to cardinals and cicadas, she points out that everyone deserves to be able to enjoy nature.
Sometimes just being outside can take you away from it all and be able to figure out yourself and things like that. So you're not always in the midst of the news, in the midst of everything that's going on around you. So I think nature is like the perfect place to kind of decompress.
Donna McDermott, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.fm, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.